Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Yeah.
It is fun because we're here. The weekend. Thank you, weekend, for being you. I don't know where I'd be if it wasn't for the weekend. But I still got to come in this weekend. Ugh, just remembered that. My excitement level went from a 10 to about a 7. But some training things. I'm only going to be here for a little bit, I guess. If you have something good you'd like to share, I'd love to hear it. 314-436-7900. That's the phone number here. You can call or text it in. Or 800-925-1120. In fact, there was two things I wanted to play for you here. It happened earlier today as part of the funeral service for President George H.W. Bush. If you haven't heard this story, it's a pretty remarkable one. Some years ago, the Oak Ridge Boys were performing in Friends of George H.W. Bush. And for the longest time, they wanted to keep a promise to sing at his funeral after decades of friendship. And they had that opportunity to do that here today. Said, we've been carrying a suit on our tour bus for a couple of months and wondering. They didn't know when it was going to happen, but they were preparing themselves for something they knew eventually would. Oak Ridge Boys went through and followed through on that promise today when they sang Amazing Grace at his funeral. I wanted to play this whole thing for you. It's a couple minutes long, but I thought it was just wonderful. I thought they did a great job, and they told a little story about their friendship beforehand.
We'll sing for our president.
Amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me. I once was lost, but now I'm found. Was blind, but now I see. 'Twas grace that my heart to fear, and grace my fears relieved. How precious did that grace appear the hour I first believed.
They said when they sang for Bush one last time on Thursday, their promise to sing at his funeral was the final marker on 3 decades of their very special friendship and relationship with them. And the Bushes used to invite them, I guess, to their home in Maine for trips for fishing and dinners and singing or whatever it is. And last summer, the band visited the former president at his home in Houston. They half-jokingly asked them to sing at his funeral. He said, "Of course we will, sir, but let's not talk about that." Well, right after his death, they knew that he said yes to them. Now, the group, the Oak Ridge Boys, said yes. And even though it was brought up in a way where it's kind of morbid, it was an honest request, and they honored it today. Said they all knew how much President Bush loved us and how much we loved him, and they all thanked us for being here. It was so nice to be welcomed by the family. He said he had no words to describe the honor of being included in the service. Just really, it was saying goodbye to a friend, he said. One of the greatest things that they've ever had the honor of doing. One other performer was Reba McEntire, saying the Lord's Prayer at Houston during the funeral service following the Oak Ridge Boys. The church where the Bush family worship was filled with other celebrities too, but really amazing. It was another fitting tribute and way to say goodbye to George H.W. Bush. Do you have any good things you'd like to share? Something positive? 314-436-7900 or 800-925-1120. I'm glad I was able to play that whole thing to you. There's three songs my son likes me to sing to him when I'm there at night to put him down to sleep. Like, we normally, you know, we'd have the nighttime routine. You brush your teeth, you go to the bathroom. Then we read books. We read five books, but the kids' books go by pretty quick. So we're normally done maybe 20 minutes of reading or something like that. And then he likes for us to sing him a song. And I don't know if my wife does it. He gets me to do it. And there's three songs he likes to sing. He likes to sing How Great Thou Art. He likes to sing Mr. Rogers, you know, It's a Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood. And the third song is Amazing Grace. And I can't wait to play that for him tomorrow. I think he's really going to enjoy it. A couple of other good stories. You know, I have some bonus good stories to share with you. There's so many good ones out there. I thought, why just do one segment tonight? Might as well start the weekend off right. We're getting close to Christmas, and we should show ourselves some gratitude, some of those positive things that are out there. Feel free to share yours. It's Overnight America, KMOX. Overnight America continues here. I got a couple other good stories for you. Normally, when you talk about New York City hospitality, it's someone yelling at you. But hey, at least you get to see Pizza Rat every once in a while. You know, rats that will pick up entire slices of pizza and drag them to other places. So you got that going in New York City. There's another good thing that's going on there. Pam Coulter brought this up in CBS News. The internet keeps showing photos of this colorful duck that everyone's going crazy for. It says, a lot of New Yorkers are gaga over a colorful feathered friend. I guess this could be categorized in the tell me something good, that New Yorkers are actually looking at something positive. They're not just miserable all the time. But I don't know why so many people are going crazy for this duck.
New Yorkers aren't so jaded after all. Ever since a Mandarin duck showed up in Central Park over a month ago, it's been drawing crowds, including a lot of photographers who hope to capture the bird's pink, purple, orange, and green markings. One member of what's become known as the Quackerazzi compared the little duck to a living box of crayons. One bird expert says Mandarin ducks aren't all that rare, and this one may have just escaped from someone's property. Pam Coulter, CBS News.
So it's not even a rare duck. Hey, look at that pigeon. Oh, my goodness. Everybody go crazy for that pigeon. I think that's hilarious. At least they're rallying around something that's not like a crime scene. New York duck. But we'll chalk that down as something good. How about this one? Tyler Perry is in the news for a positive reason. And he was down in the Atlanta area, Douglasville. And I know we have listeners down in the Atlanta area we hear from every once in a while. Tyler Perry may have taken care of something that a lot of parents do. I didn't know this was still a thing, but I guess it is. Layaway. If you go and you want to get a toy or whatever it is or an item for Christmas, you can put it on layaway, make the payments, and then when it comes time, you go pick it up, right? You put it aside. So Perry, the prolific Atlanta filmmaker, went into a Walmart in East Point and asked the Walmart and the manager, basically said, how many toys do you have on layaway? How many do you got? So they told him, and they said, okay, I want to buy all those toys. He spent $434,000 to buy those toys. Any items on layaway at those multiple stores he visited were paid in full. Said, I know it's hard times, everyone's struggling, and I'm just really, really grateful to be in position to do this, he said in a video. So God bless you. Go get your stuff and Merry Christmas. Perry was inspired to make the gift after watching a segment on Good Morning America, Walmart's Secret Santas, which people were doing. Usually there's about 1,000 layaway accounts in the store during the holidays. Good Samaritans will every once in a while go and pay a few random accounts or whatever it may be. How awesome is Tyler Perry for doing that? Seriously, that is so, so cool. Here's another good story. This is a good one. In Colombia, there's a person that is a trash collector, drives around in his truck, does what every trash collector does, pick up the trash, right? Every once in a while, he'll see something in the trash that is worth collecting. And what he keeps an eye out for are books. For the past 20 years, he's been on a mission. He finds discarded books. And believe it or not, people throw books away as opposed to donating them or whatever it is. And who knows, it's maybe different in Colombia where they don't see the value in it. But he saved books for the last 20 years doing his garbage route. And usually, you know, they're in good condition. He takes them home and he created his own library, which now is a total of 25,000 at last count. 25,000. As the collection grew, people began to take notice. Visitors would walk in, ask to borrow a book or two, help their kids get through school, help entertain, whatever it is. When you're in certain parts of the world, it's a luxury to be able to have books as entertainment, libraries, anything to rent. And some really poor areas, they struggle with things like this. It's not like the United States or even here in St. Louis, where we have a great library system and you can get whatever you want, when you want it, where you want it. You know, your local library, you can request a book. They'll deliver it to your local branch for you to pick up. They'll put you on a waiting list if it's a popular book or whatever it is. They do the same thing for videos if you want to watch a movie. And you don't even have to travel around to find what you want. You reserve it and you pick it up and you return it when you're done. Awesome system. If you don't use the St. Louis library system, you have to get involved with it. Just to give a little bit, my wife reads a lot. She's got like 60 some books she's read this year. And the only reason she's able to do it is because of the library system. You think we'd be able to afford buying 60 some books a year? Yeah, right. Avid reader. Very awesome system. Anything she wants, she gets it. All she has to do is hop online and put it out there. This guy realizes the value of that, being able to share stories, being able to share books, and he wants to do that for people. He said, in fact, since he's got started, he's donated reading material to 235 different schools and communities. Said, kids don't have a place to study. Instead, they have to start working early. He's invited to book fairs. He's in local newspapers. He's donated all kinds of different things. In fact, one person gave him an ambulance, so he turned it into a bookmobile, and he goes to different events, and he gives out books to kids. How awesome is that? Says the other truck drivers know exactly what type of books to bring him, if any, so now all of his coworkers are in on it to help him grow his collection and help enrich the community he lives in. That is a great story. I got one other one I want to bring up to you, and if you have a good story you'd like to share, 314-436-7900. Or 800-925-1120. This is from the BBC. They have now created a suit that will help the paralyzed walk. One of the hardest things in life is losing your ability to communicate with other people. If you become trapped in your own mind, and we know once that happens, it's very easy to just go down this spiral, this negative spiral in your life. And it's frustrating and not being able to convey your thoughts or even ask very simple commands like, I'm thirsty, and what that'll do for a person. Now, if you're paralyzed and you have the inability to move around, we also know that it's very frustrating. I've talked to people with disabilities that feel like they're a burden on their family. Let's say they're in an accident, or they just have something debilitating happen to them, and they weren't always in that scenario. At first, they don't mind asking friends and family, hey, can you pick me up and take me to a doctor's office? Hey, can you help me with this? Hey, can you go shopping with me? Hey, can you help me with whatever? And up to a certain point, they're okay with it until they're not. And you talk to them and they say, it was such a terrible thing. I felt like I was a burden to my family. I felt like all I was doing was asking them and I couldn't help them in any way. It was just one way. All I would do is take, take, take. And it gets to the point where they feel so bad about that, they just stop asking. They stop asking the friends and family to take them to doctor's appointments, and they just, their health gets worse. They stop asking friends to take them to social events, so they stop socializing. They lose track of the outside world, and it's a terrible, terrible cycle. So anything that can be done to try to break that sort of thing, if you're paralyzed, the ability to get your independence back is huge. So when I read stories about this, now they have developed a suit that helps the paralyzed walk. This is amazing to me. Here's the BBC reporting.
Mitsuko Negashio suffered from polio when she was a child, which left her in a wheelchair until now. Today, she's wearing a HAL suit. HAL, hybrid assisted limbs.
And it shows her she's like on a treadmill. Oops, she's on a treadmill. And she's walking. It looks like she's walking with the assistance of this machinery.
When you want to move your arms or your legs, your brain sends electrical signals to the muscles to tell them to move. This suit detects those signals, and that's what makes it move. So, if you can't move your arms or your legs, the suit still detects the signals, and so it can walk for you. For example, if I stop my arm from moving, but flex the muscles.
So what they have is this robot arm that he's standing next to. It looks like if you're on you work on a line or something, and there's these robot arms, almost Terminator style. So it's just basically, you know, what would look like the bones underneath your flesh, and there's a little elbow on it. And on the guy, there's these little terminals that are stuck onto him, kind of like when you see the movies where they put the little the meter readers or whatever, they glue them onto your head or your body or whatever it is. I don't know. I can't remember what they're called. But if you see it, he's got the little patches on, the wires coming off of it, and he's showing how all he has to do is think and then just flex a little like he's going to raise his hand, and the robot arm raises its hand. It's really cool. Even though, you know, he can do it with no restriction, and the robot mimics his hand. He stops his hand from moving, but he still makes it so he's trying to move his arm, and it continues to do it. That's pretty awesome.
It still detects the will to move the legs.
Lower limb disabilities are often caused by a damaged and disconnected nervous system between what the brain wants to do and resulting muscle movements. However, even in severe cases, there are still weak electrical signals that do make it through. HAL is being used for rehabilitation in serious spinal cord injuries and other neuromuscular diseases, where previously patients had no prospect of being able to move their legs again.
Wow. Bringing some hope to people. That is so cool. That's out of Japan. Scientists hoping that they could build on this and continue to help people rehabilitate, or maybe even bring them back some independence that is desperately needed. If you got a good story you would like to share, 314-436-7900 or 800-925-1120. Got a couple of other stories I want to share. You know what today is. It's a very special day in American history for a lot of people. If you are old enough to remember Pearl Harbor, I mean, we're losing all of our World War II vet-aged citizens every day by, you know, record numbers. And if you know anyone that fought in World War II that's still alive, you should do everything you can tomorrow. Don't wake them up. You know, it's 1:28 in the morning. Don't wake them up right now, but do whatever you can tomorrow to give them a call and just cherish any moment you have left with them. So we'll talk about that in a little bit too, but I wanted to get to our next guest, Dr. Albert Lin, with the National Geographic Explorer host. We'll look at the potential for human deep space travel. Love talking stuff like this. He'll be coming up next on Overnight America KMOX. Coming up on Monday, National Geographic, a new episode of Explorer, which is 6 o'clock Eastern, 5 o'clock Central on National Geographic. Joining us now is Dr. Albert Lin. Thanks for coming on to KMOX.
Hey, thanks for having me.
You're a correspondent with Explorer, and your episode is coming up. And I'm pretty fascinated by all the different things that you do with your life, technology and exploration. And it's fun to theorize what it would take to send people to different planets. There's been a lot of talk about privatizing space travel. So that's got to excite you, just to begin with.
Oh, well, you know, just as a human, let alone as a correspondent for this show, it's just exciting to think about what our frontier is on a daily basis. And to think that maybe one day we might actually go, you know, beyond our own little sphere of planets here.
Yeah. You know, when you listen to people like Elon Musk, they make it sound like it's, you know, there's a 100% chance that they're going to send someone there in the next decade. Do you think that's going to happen?
You know, I certainly don't think it's impossible. I've actually even had friends that made it to the, you know, to the space program in terms of being a cadet for the astronaut program. Mm-hmm. And it seems like they're starting to train really with the mindset of keeping an eye on Mars.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that given the amount of technological advances that we are having nowadays, and you know, it's really exponential. It's almost like every single day we're going, you know, beyond what we thought we could have done before, but not just in a linear way, really in an exponential way.
Yeah.
I think it's really possible. It's just about, you know, it really comes down to human drive, like whether or not we want to go, whether or not we think it's an imperative. But eventually, it's not necessarily about the next 10 years or 20 years. If you think about it, even the next 100 years, I believe we'll end up going.
Wow. You know, and that's what you're going to explore Monday on National Geographic Explorer. You're going to look at the potential for human travel into deep space. And I've heard that originally after the moon landing and through the Apollo programs, NASA's intention was to send people to Mars in the 70s. However, lack of funding put that aside. Do you know anything about that?
Yeah, I think we've always kind of looked at that as a goal. And I'm sure that it was in the conversation directly following anything to do with the moon. Mm-hmm. It is a huge endeavor financially in terms of research and the enterprise of building something that can sustain human life as it travels for up to 6 months, 7 months on its way out to Mars. And that's just given the current propulsion systems that they're looking at now.
Yeah.
And you just got to think about what kind of challenges that faces. So in this episode where we're really looking at space and the space race as a whole, one part that I had a role in was going and talking to Scott Kelly, the astronaut who spent the most amount of time in space of any human being, right? I mean, the guy is amazing. Over 500 days in space, orbiting around in this little tin box, basically, right, the ISS. And the impact of that time up there on his body, it's just unbelievable.
You know, the studies of what happened to his DNA compared to his twin brother and things, it's real fascinating what happens once you get up there and spend so much time. And you're someone that is traveling all across the Earth. You said you were just deep diving in Mexico, and you're doing this and you're doing that. You think you could actually stand still in a small craft for 6 months, how long it would take to send someone to a place like Mars?
You know, I don't think I could. It's really rough. He told me that his day is basically managed to the minute. He's got this sort of upfront list of things he has to do because he's coordinated by all these people on the ground trying to get him to do different experiments and tasks and here and there. So literally every minute is accounted for, and that's got to feel pretty stressful. Hmm. But then I think, you know, there's all these other things that happen, right? For example, he pees out about 1% of his bone mass every month.
Huh.
Got to not feel great.
No. Never heard that stat before.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, in like 100 months, you'd be basically just this big blob of muscle and meat, right? So that doesn't sound great. He's got 10 to 20 chest x-rays or the equivalent of that going on every day based on the radiation, right?
Yeah.
He's got all this sort of fluid building up in his skull because there's no gravity to keep it pressed down as he's walking around, and that messes with his eyesight. I mean, there's all sorts of things that are happening, but I think the most salient for me was a conversation where, you know, he sort of said that he believes that one day there'd be this word to describe the nostalgia for the sounds of nature.
Mm-hmm.
He's stuck up there, and he just doesn't hear it.
Yeah.
It's just little blips and blibs and booms, but it's not the sounds that you're used to, just being here on Earth.
Wow.
They would even send up these recordings of different sort of nature sounds. When he said that some of the Russian astronauts even had a recording of mosquitoes. That's not my first choice in terms of the sound I want to remember. But I think that it's pretty profound, right? I mean, this is something where we're going beyond and we're really leaving what we understand as what it means to be alive on planet Earth.
Wow. Dr. Albert Lin joins us, a National Geographic Explorer. New one coming up on Monday, 6 o'clock Eastern, 5 o'clock Central, where they'll look at the potential for human travel into deep space. Do you study a lot about how the technology is advancing here and some of the ways where they're talking about different ways for propulsion and how they could sustain life and how they might be able to terraform? And there's always been discussions about the technology side. What kind of things get you excited about the potential of going to a planet like Mars?
But in this particular episode, we're looking at what is being explored in terms of our ability to turn on some deep, maybe very, very deeply rooted traits that don't exist in our functions as humans anymore, but might be in our ancestral DNA. Things like hibernation. You know, there's a primate, a very early primate, the lemur, which it looks like basically like a little squirrel mixed with a monkey, but it's a very cute little animal. And when you're staring at it, you don't realize this. It's really hard to tell, but we're actually looking at a distant relative. We share a lot of the DNA with this tiny, tiny little animal that lives in the islands of Madagascar. And what's really interesting there is that animal can go into a state of hibernation where it doesn't need to eat, it doesn't need to drink. It's basically virtually in sleep mode, in power down mode, if you like. And a lot of the things that they're worried about having to deal with on long space expeditions from a human survival standpoint might be bypassed by being in a state of hibernation. So there's actually real research going on to see whether or not there's things like CRISPR and other sort of gene editing tools that might one day lead to an approach that would include human hibernation.
Wow. You know, whenever you talk about anything space, do you get a lot of conspiracy theorists that try to harass you online?
You know, I don't know. We'll see, I guess, right?
We'll see if they reach out. Once the show is airing, almost immediately, if you're on Twitter or you have an email address that's publicly on the web, you'll know. You'll know if they're going to be out there.
Look, I think, you know, I'm the son of an astrophysicist, so I've always looked up at the stars with wonder. And I think that, you know, humans, we've always been explorers. We've left the continent of Africa to go out and expand into the planets of, you know, our different continents across the different oceans, and now we're looking at space as the next frontier.
Yeah.
And honestly, I just think it's a real human thing to always want to go further, to always want to go beyond, to just keep on exploring. And I guess that's kind of what this show is about. You know, it really takes the heart and soul of the National Geographic magazine, which I grew up with, and brings it to the screen. And it's, for me as a correspondent, one of these dream come true sort of experiences, because I've literally been bouncing all over the world, really talking to some of the most incredible people doing the most unbelievable research, or the next week climbing up a 200-foot-tall Doug fir.
Wow.
To measure, you know, how certain signals might be communicated across one tree to the next, or, you know, one day talking to the head of the FDA's cybersecurity infrastructure agent, and looking at like what's happening from the standpoint of our cybersecurity with our medical devices and things like this. I mean, it's really one of those things where this last year has been a total adventure in seeing what the frontier is. And if it takes, you know, a little bit of spam, bring it on.
Yeah. You know, the last thing you'll have to do if you haven't done it already is change your ringtone to the theme song for Explorer, the classic song in episode going into the episode. So, all right. So, of course, people can watch it on National Geographic. It starts 6 o'clock Eastern, 5 o'clock Central this Monday. You'll be hosting the episode that looks for the potential of human travel into deep space. Dr. Albert Lin, if someone wants to read more about the adventures you're going through, how can people find you?
Well, I guess they can. I'm on Instagram, on Explorer Albert. That's my handle, and they can find me there. But you got to end with a theme song now that you've laid it out there.
Dun 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 dun
dun.
You have to turn that into your ringtone after you're hosting.
I wake up with it every morning, trust me.
I know. Once it gets stuck in your head, it's impossible to get out. Dr. Albert Lin, thank you so much for coming on to Overnight America.
Hey, it's a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
He joins us on the Quiver River Electric guest line. Yeah, enjoy that Explorer episode Monday, 6 Eastern, 5 Central on National Geographic. All right, up next, a day which will live in infamy, the famous speech. But did you know there was another famous speech that somehow gets ignored, one that came actually before that one? We're going to do that next on Overnight America KMOX. It was 77 years ago. The attack on Pearl Harbor. Really a moment in American history that it's a kind of a shame that so often it goes under the radar. We kind of forget about that because the people that remember it are passing away and they're getting to the age where there's really not a lot of vets around who participated in World War II. Once you get up 95, 100, over 100 years old, they start dropping off in record rates, and there's only so many World War II vets left to honor. And if you know one, please, please give them a call tomorrow and spend as much time as you can with them. If you can go visit them, even better, and cherish that time because there's not going to be many more. Like a text that came in, Judith said that she remembers the blackouts where you would have to dark the shades in order to not have light. You know, I think the idea was you were afraid that if Japan sent planes over the mainland in the United States, you didn't want to give them a target to point at, you know, the light in your window. So you'd have these tiny light lamps in there and you'd, you know, keep the shades drawn. And even here in St. Louis, there was procedures. There was watchmen that would stand on the top of the Fox Theater. And if there was some air raids going on, if they were worried that there'd be a target here, they would draw people inside to the shelters to help protect them. You know, if you're out on the street, they would literally pull you in if these were going on. And then they would have people with these giant binoculars on top of the building looking out for this. One of the things we remember on Pearl Harbor Day with the attack that happened some 77 years ago was the famous speech by FDR. You know, the speech that goes like this.
December 7th, 1941, a date which will live in infamy.
Gonna guess that clip you're gonna hear maybe a couple of times today. But that'll be about it, right? They'll mention it maybe in the news.
Forces of the Empire of Japan. The United States was at peace with that nation, and at the solicitation of Japan, was still in conversation with its government and its emperor, looking toward the maintenance of peace in the Pacific. The attack yesterday on the Hawaiian Islands has caused severe damage to American naval and military forces.
You know, and the speech continued on with the famous FDR speech there from 1941. During that attack, there were casualties, many casualties. 68 were killed, 35 were wounded, 3 aircraft were shot down, 4 battleships were sunk, 4 other were damaged, and many other aircraft destroyed, 188 destroyed, 159 damaged. That was the civilian casualties, 2,335 casualties of our brave soldiers that were there, and over 1,000 that were wounded on top of that. And I didn't know that this speech existed, but I was doing some research, and before FDR gave that famous speech, a day which will live in infamy, the First Lady, Eleanor Roosevelt, actually gave a public radio address. This is before the other speech. And I thought to myself, I don't think I've ever heard that broadcasted. You always hear FDR, but you don't hear Eleanor Roosevelt giving her radio address. And this may be some of the first information people would have heard. I'm going to play that for you. This is, I think, a pretty interesting look because a lot of its initial information that came from the attacks and as they were trying to gather their intel.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I'm speaking to you tonight at a very serious moment in our history. The cabinet is convening and the leaders in Congress are meeting with the president. The State Department and Army and Navy officials have been with the president all afternoon. In fact, the Japanese ambassador was talking to the president at the very time that Japan's airships were bombing our citizens in Hawaii and the Philippines and sinking one of our transports loaded with lumber on its way to Hawaii. By tomorrow morning, the members of Congress will have a full report and be ready for action. In the meantime, we, the people, are already prepared for action. For months now, the knowledge that something of this kind might happen has been hanging over our heads. And yet, it seemed impossible to believe, impossible to drop the everyday things of life and feel that there was only one thing which was important, preparation to meet an enemy, no matter where he struck. That is all over now, and there is no more uncertainty. We know what we have to face, and we know that we are ready to face it. I should like to say just a word to the women in the country tonight. I have a boy at sea on a destroyer. For all I know, he may be on his way to the Pacific. Two of my children are in coast cities on the Pacific. Many of you all over this country have boys in the services who will now be called upon to go into action. You have friends and families in what has suddenly become a danger zone. You cannot escape anxiety. You cannot escape a clutch of fear at your heart. And yet I hope that the certainty of what we have to meet will make you rise above these fears. We must go about our daily business more determined than ever to do the ordinary things as well as we can. And when we find a way to do anything more in our communities to help others, to build morale, to give a feeling of security, we must do it. Whatever is asked of us, I am sure we can accomplish it. We are the free and unconquerable people of the United States of America. To the young people of the nation, I must speak a word tonight. You are going to have a great opportunity. There will be high moments in which your strength and your ability will be tested. I have faith in you. I feel as though I was standing upon a rock. And that rock is my faith in my fellow citizens. Now we will go back to the program which we had arranged for tonight.
I think that's remarkable. I've never heard that speech. To think that was given on radio, and that might have been the first time someone would have heard something if they were just turning it on. I'm sure there are other news reports and bulletins that were coming through. I'm sure there were other neighbors reaching out and doing their thing. But man, that was an excellent speech, a great address to the nation. I figure we could end the show, at least on this hour, with Ray Charles, America the Beautiful, in honor of all the veterans that lost their lives on the attack of Pearl Harbor. And if you still have family members that are World War II aged, please reach out to them today. You will not regret the time that is spent because you're not going to have that opportunity much longer. This is Overnight America. We'll be back next hour. KMOX.
Oh, beautiful. In liberating strife, who more than self, our country loved. God thy gold refine.
sing it something like this. Listen here.
Oh, beauty Bella, far spacious skies, far amber waves of grain, far purple mountain majesties. Now wait a minute, I'm talking about America.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2 times points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.